Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Doctor, lawyer, Indian chief. For my life is on screen with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. Temper all the times I've tried.
Welcome to Court Appointed. Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
We're bringing you this episode from the beach.
It's the ocean breeze. Waves crashing.
Tommy drinking margaritas.
You know when you don't want to be living by the ocean?
Tsunami?
Well, tsunami.
Hurricane?
Or when there's a giant iceberg floats up next to your town. Did you see that?
What?
There's that small village in, I don't know whether it's Iceland or somewhere like that. And this giant iceberg that's like bigger than the town came floating up out of the ocean right next to their town.
Really?
And pieces of it are starting to break off, and it's causing like these massive waves to come washing up on their shore. And they're hoping, they're all praying for a strong breeze that blows out to sea to push this iceberg away because it's threatening their entire city.
Sounds like a good time to surf there.
Yeah, yeah. It looked like the Lilliputians or something, this giant iceberg hovering over the town. Look that up. It's crazy.
I've seen videos of massive ice falls where they fall like in different bays and things like that and then cause these huge waves.
Yeah.
They are pretty huge.
Yeah. Well, this had a big piece break off, but they're worried that a piece even bigger could break off if it doesn't move soon.
Oh, and destroy the city.
Yeah.
They need to build a flood wall like Huntington.
Well, yeah, because that's why we have no use of our riverfront property.
Yeah, it's true, but
it has saved us a couple of times since the flood of 1939 or whatever it
was. I'll tell you what, you take that flood wall down, we'd have a flood the very next year.
Yeah, that's the way those things work.
The flood wall is a strange thing. It's kind of a yin and a yang.
There's a lot of weird weather going on. Did you see the funnel cloud over New York City?
I did not.
They had a picture of that last night, I think it was. And there was a funnel cloud over New York. Now, evidently it didn't touch down. But, I mean, I'm talking about over Manhattan, there was a funnel cloud.
Well, it doesn't have to touch down very far because all those skyscrapers.
That's true. It was right over the top of them. It was wild looking.
I've actually never seen a tornado. I think it's a funnel cloud until it touches down. Then when it touches down, it's actually called a tornado. That's my pedestrian understanding of those phenomena.
Well, it could be.
But I've never seen one of those ever, actually. I've seen a water spout.
Yeah.
I've seen it touch down the water. Quite a few times.
Have you seen a fire water spout?
No, I have not.
They had one of those on TV the other night. They have, you know, those ones they call the devil twisters or something like that.
That's
like
the devils.
Dust devils. Yeah, one of those. They had one of those that swept up a forest fire. So it was burning and it moved out over the water, creating a water spout of fire and water.
I would just give up if I saw a flaming water spout.
That's it. We're all dead. It's a zombie apocalypse. Run for it.
It's all
there's
over.
Flaming water spouts. There's twisting tornado things over New York City, and there's icebergs invading small Lilliputian towns.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Well, this episode is not about death and destruction.
No.
So to speak. Well, actually, I guess it kind of is a little bit.
Well, yeah, without meaning to lead into it that way.
I didn't actually mean to.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Cheryl Hopper posted... Sorry, Cheryl.
Cheryl did it. Cheryl posted it.
Cheryl Hopper posted a link to an article about
a
new lawsuit that is taking place in Las Vegas in California in the aftermath of the Las Vegas shooting at the MGM Grand for that country music concert, October of 2017. She posted that kindly enough on her Facebook page to kind of explain a little bit about what it was. So it kind of caught me off guard when I read that, because the title of the newspaper article was basically that something along the lines of MGM suing victims over shooting.
Yeah.
Or something kind of inflammatory like that.
I mean, that's one of those, you read that and you go, WTF? I mean, that is just unbelievable.
OMG.
Yeah, or that too. one of those two-letter things.
Hashtag no way. So I immediately clicked on it to try to figure out what it was talking about, and it became a bit more clear as to what actually was taking place, which I think believe it or not, the title of the article was a bit more inflammatory than what is actually taking place. Nonetheless, I wanted to get explain it. It was kind of a good idea because it's probably a little bit of American civil procedure or law that most people don't know about.
Well, let's hope there's some kind of law to it, because on the surface, it just sounds downright unconscionable.
It does. So MGM has filed something that is called a declaratory judgment. You ever heard of that before?
No, but it sounds like they're saying, we want you to say right now, we're not responsible for this.
Kind of in a nutshell. That's pretty close.
All right.
Now, their argument is actually kind of nuanced, and it's very complicated. Somebody really, really thought this out. So we're going to go through it and kind of explain what the basis for this declaratory action is, or declaratory.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
That's right. Although I think that somebody probably had this sitting on the back burner for a while, just waiting to go if something like this happened.
Oh, I think there were some a room full of lawyers that spent the night smoking and drinking and dreamed this one up.
So all states have this, but there's also a federal court remedy as well. Declaratory Judgment Act allows a federal court to declare the rights and other legal relations of parties to a case of actual controversy. A declaratory judgment can be brought by any interested party involving actual controversy, and it is appropriate when the parties, much like the victims, could presently sue but just haven't done so yet. And this was brought under 28 U.S.C. Code 2201, and this is what created the federal remedy for declaratory judgments or declaratory actions. Now, states have these causes of actions as well, and I've actually filed a couple DEC actions before. That's what we call them when you work in the biz.
What kind of actions?
A DEC action.
Okay. Make sure you say that clearly. Otherwise, it might be confused for some other type of industry.
So if you hear somebody say DEC action, they're not talking about, like, they're going to go in their backyard and build a deck.
Or deal cards or
something. Or a patio. No. They're talking about a declaratory action.
Decaction.
A decaction?
Decaction.
Maybe. I had to think about that one for a minute. One case I remember where I had to file a DEC action was I had a client who had an insurance policy, a homeowner's policy, and they had a Dalmatian dog. And evidently, this Dalmatian dog was a bit of a a-hole.
Was it one of 101?
It might have been. And it bit somebody who was at a party.
The dog was an a-hole. Did you have two witnesses to testify to this?
Well, no, I think we can take judicial notice it was an a-hole because it bit somebody on the face. So...
Did it come down with writing on the side of it that said, bite me, Bob?
So the insurance company actually had denied coverage because they had a specific exemption under the policy.
For a-hole dogs.
For not covering certain breeds. And Dalmatians were actually one of them, which
really?
Were not covered. Yeah.
You'd think they'd be a gentle breed.
Well, I did some
research. Fire stations and everything.
I did some research at the time, and Dalmatians did pop up quite a bit on dog bite type cases. Hmm. And just to follow up on it today, I did it again, and I did not see Dalmatians listed as those. So I don't know.
I think they got together and got their own lawyer, the Dalmatians,
mm-hmm.
and they sued for slander, listing them on the dog bite pages. So
it's
I think they got it removed. It was defamation.
It was a class action.
Yeah.
There were 101 of them.
101 class action.
No, 101 Dalmatians in a class action. Oh, that's my joke for the day. I'll see myself out after that one.
Oh, Charlie's been hanging around me too long. She got in a good dad joke the other day. Mary and her were talking about why you don't see Ariel's mother in Little Mermaid. You see her father, but you don't see her mother. Mary said, where do you think Ariel's mother is? And Charlie said, oh, I know where she is. And Mary said, where? And she said, she went to the grocery store.
Oh my goodness. That's a good one.
I was so proud of her. A three-year-old come up with that dad joke. That was pretty good.
She has been hanging around with you too much.
I know.
That's some next level stuff.
I could not believe that she came up with that.
Well, tonight, to finish up my spotty storytelling about my Dalmatian story.
Your spotty story? I got that.
The court case actually turned on the fact that the policy said Dalmatians were exempt, but when the person filled out the policy with the underwriter and everything like that, they were asked what kind of dog they had. They actually wrote on their Dalmatian, and they wrote the policy anyway. So there were some coverage issues there that had to be litigated. So that's why he filed a deck action to have a court make a determination about whether or not there was coverage. So,
Well, I would think that wouldn't insurance policy be considered a contract?
Yeah, kind of.
Well, there wasn't a meeting of the minds there if it said we don't have Dalmatians. They wrote down we have a Dalmatian, and they both signed it and said it was a good contract. I don't think they had a meeting of the minds.
Well, that sounds like a simple answer. We'll just leave it at that.
Well, I'm a simple man. As Lynyrd Skynyrd sang that song about me.
So a deck action is actually not where you're suing someone in the sense of a personal injury case, which is what this article, I think, wanted to lead people to believe, that these victims were somehow negligent or they were responsible for their own victimization or whatever, because that's not exactly what this is. It's not like that at all, actually.
No, they even went as far as to say something to the effect that they're doing this so all the victims can put this thing behind them.
I'm not buying that completely, but...
Yeah, that's some lawyer speak.
Yeah, I mean, you know, paint it however you want, but...
If the act fits, you must acquit.
No, well, I mean, they are trying to say, like, hey, rather than go ahead and we'll argue each of these cases out individually and then, you know, string it out over time and really cause a lot of delay, let's just cut to the chase. Here's the argument we're putting forth. Mm-hmm. So... let's just get through all the red tape, and rather than you file your individual lawsuits and try to say that we're the ones responsible for it, and then we kind of posture back and forth and we do discovery and we'll spin for a couple of years. Hey, we're laying it out here right now. Here's what our defense is. Do whatever you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do kind of see maybe a bit of some terse justice in that to a certain degree.
Terse justice?
Yeah.
Well, there is no justice for these victims, you know.
Well, no, there's not. I mean, no amount of money or anything is going to make it right. So, but I do kind of see where they're coming from with it. So MGM is actually not saying the victims did anything improper. Basically what they're doing is they're asking a federal court to kind of preemptively determine whether or not a certain federal law prohibits a lawsuit by the victims against them. So basically instead forcing them to pursue a claim of action or cause of action against the person, or not the person, but the company that provided the security, Contemporary Services Corporation, or CSC. So that's who they're trying to say, hey, we hired this safety vendor, and they're the ones who didn't do what they were supposed to, so there's no cause of action against us. It should be against them. Now, normally in your regular run-of-the-mill type lawsuit, they would both probably... equally be named defendants in this kind of
right
case, because hey, the MGM owned the property where they were the vendor for that, they had security, so the security company is liable, and a court would probably apportion a little bit of negligence on each party.
Well, they would grab anybody. A lot of times they'll grab anybody that has money, whether they really think they have any part of it or not. I mean, like, they could name who was the singer that was there. They could name them as part of it too.
Yeah.
You know, you could name anybody that had any company. If they were selling Pepsis there, you could name Pepsi in it. You know, a lot of times they'll grab everybody that's there that might have money involved.
Yeah, and the reason, obviously, they want to sue MGM, they're the deep pocket. I mean, sure. they have the most coverage, the biggest insurance policies, the most assets, the most ability to pay these different kinds of lawsuits. And there have been quite a few lawsuits already over this. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Different lawyers in Las Vegas were probably chomping at the bit to start filing these things. I mean, because, you know, obviously it seems like probably a no-brainer that a jury's going to want to fine for you, or that insurance companies are going to want to settle and not try these kinds of cases.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So
you sure don't want to do a jury trial?
No, not at all. And I don't even know how you would have an unbiased jury in a case like this. I mean, you'd have to try it in a different state, or I don't even know where.
You'd have to find a bunch of Kimmy Schmidts that just climbed out of the molehole.
That's right. Now, the reason I said that typically they would each have different kind of apportioned liability, and that's kind of different in this case possibly, is because of something called the Safety Act. And I am going to confess to you here and today, I had no idea what the Safety Act was prior to looking this up or prior to hearing about this.
Huh. Do you know what the safety dance is?
Yeah, kind of.
Performed by men with hats?
That sounds like Under Pressure.
Yeah, that did sound like it.
Yes, I do know what the Safety Dance is.
Oh, okay. It's just Safety Act. Well, you're lucky that I did my research on the Safety Act then.
I used to go to Monday 80s night at the Drop Shop back in college. And they played I did a lot of the safety dancing back in the day.
Weren't they an Australian group?
Maybe.
They're kind of weird like that. That seemed like an Australian thing.
The safety dance?
Yeah, men without hats.
I think they were Australian.
Men with hats or men without hats? There was hats on the men or not, something like that.
That other Australian group, Men with Oil?
Men with Oil? No, I don't remember that one.
I mean, it was Midnight Oil. Never mind. Didn't catch that one.
No.
A little bit of a reach.
I didn't get that one.
Well, the Safety Act originated, and I know you did some research about it, and you're going to go into it a bit more, but right after 9/11, private security companies faced kind of like a new era of liability for acts of terrorism. And in response, Congress enacted the Support Anti-Terrorism by Fostering Effective Technology Act in 2002. And basically, what the Safety Act does, it limits liability for claims resulting from any act of terrorism where a qualified security technology or services company is involved. So, because CSC provided the security services to this customer, MGM, and CSC had a special designation by DHS, Department of Homeland Security, the casino and resort company claims that basically CSC is a covered seller under services under the Safety Act. So, the Safety Act, I'm not going to say it was some sort of knee-jerk reaction to 9/11, but maybe it was a knee-jerk reaction to 9/11.
Well, my question isn't so much, was it a knee-jerk reaction? Because I think it was founded in good terms. The Department of Homeland Security recognized that to encourage industries to make new technologies would likely mean that some would require additional development, testing, and evaluation before being available for deployment. As a result, the final regulation implements a process whereby technologies in development may be afforded Safety Act designation. This type of designation is referred to as developmental testing and evaluation designation. This is particularly significant to potential sellers of technologies that may be reluctant to enter the marketplace or cannot find affordable insurance for fear of massive liability. This process sees to it that promising technologies are not killed at the drawing board due to the enormity of liability arising from acts they are designed to prevent. So what they're saying is, if you're going to rely on the government to come up with new technologies and new ways to protect us, we're all SOOL. It ain't going to happen.
Right. We need private innovation.
Exactly. But the private innovation, it's like, okay, you make something and you say this is going to protect people in the event of this happening.
Right.
Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe you had all the best intentions of the world, but it didn't work. Or maybe it only minimized it, but still people were still devastated in the event something happened. So what it's saying is it worth it to me to put forth this technology? We think this will work. We think it'll help. But we can't foresee everything that might happen. So because of the liability involved, you don't go forward. Or because you still have to have insurance when you're operating as a company to do things, you still have to have insurance. Maybe the insurance would be so exorbitant you couldn't afford to buy the insurance to be able to go do this.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of this, along the similar lines of a medical research type thing, and as far as testing for drugs and things like that.
Right.
They have some limits of liability for that as well, I believe. I actually came up with an idea for glasses to keep from slipping down your nose. It was like a
handle?
Yeah, this little handle that came off the end. And
you jerk.
No, but I do see why you need something like this. I just think that a lot of legislation post 9/11 was kind of rushed into without thinking about things all the way through.
Well, see, but my
Patriot Act.
My mind is that they were not thinking along the lines of what this is being applied to.
Yeah.
Their thought is new technologies. Like, one of the biggest things that we have to worry about right now are cyber attacks.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Cyber attacks, because it's gone, and it also included that the harm that may be caused can also be financial harm, not just physical harm. Cyber attacks are, you know, the thing that we're most worried about right now. If you're a company and you think you've come up with a good method to prevent that, you're going to sell it to people. Well, if you're going to sell it to people, you're going to have some kind of insurance, because what if it doesn't work?
Yeah.
Everybody's going to say, you sold us this, and now we're doing, now you owe me $200 billion dollars because that's what my data was worth or whatever. So, you know, maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't, but this is encouraging people to be able to put something on the market that may help without them exposing themselves to, you know, financial failure.
So you don't think the actual intent was to shield anybody who is certified by Department of Homeland Security for wanding somebody down coming into a concert?
Right. I think that what it was meant for was to develop new technologies, products, innovative things, not just to certify some people that know how to, you know, patch you down or you know, clear a hallway or something like that.
You know what was innovative? The lawyers who found this loophole and thought, hey, if you get certified under this and then you hire somebody to do this and there's some sort of catastrophe, that's going to shield the person who's having it from any liability. Mm-hmm. That's pretty innovative if you ask me.
Yeah. Now, it's not 100%, but what it does is it, and I don't know how they determine this, the Department of Homeland Security determines how much insurance you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so they say, okay, well, you got to be insured up to $500,000 or $1 million or something like that. You know, that's not a big deal. I mean, I've run a small business and I've got that kind of insurance. So that's not a big deal, you know.
Hear that, all you slip and fall people?
Thanks there, dude. But the Safety Act offers substantial protections for sellers of technologies that receive designation or the higher tiered protection, certification. Designation most noticeably caps third-party liability at an approved level of insurance. The Act, however, also includes a myriad of additional risk management benefits along with designation, such as exclusive jurisdiction in federal court for suits against sellers of a technology arising from acts of terrorism, a bar against punitive damages and prejudgment interest, a limitation on non-economic damages, and liability only in proportion to the responsibility of the seller.
So let me break those down for you, each one, because those are all very kind of interesting different points that you can use and talk about, because that's actually takes a lot of the teeth out of whatever you might pursue as a
litigant,
as a plaintiff.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you are taking punitive damages out, punitive damages are damages which are meant to punish somebody for wrongdoing.
Correct.
So those are the ones that get multiplied out quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Prejudgment interest, if you wait a few years to file your lawsuit and then the court case gets knocked around for a while, there's a lot of motions, a lot of discovery, and then it's 5 or 6 years before you go to trial, all the judgment, all the interest that is accrued prior to the interest of the judgment would be accruing during that time. So you could get all that back, because basically
you should have had that money 5 or 6 years ago.
Exactly. So you're limiting that. Limitation on non-economic damages, that's kind of like more of your emotional type damages and things mm-hmm. like that. So it limits that. And also, if you have non-economic damages too, there might be some sort of theory as far as whether or not you were actually touched by the whole thing or not, whether, because if you basically don't have, if you only have kind of emotional injuries but you weren't actually physically there or touched by,
like,
it,
like say your spouse was killed standing next to you,
right, you could, well, that's, there'd be a different kind of tort, but yeah, essentially you couldn't claim economic damages based upon that.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically you're going to limit their liability to only proportionally whatever the court finds. So mm-hmm. you're cutting down quite a bit. Now, the one thing it doesn't take out is attorney's fees, I notice. So that is still one thing they left in there. But, you know, that's a pretty big thing for a plaintiff, too, to be able to get attorney's fees back. So,
but now here's the biggest thing. The second level of protection that you gain by getting this certification, it confers all of the benefits of designation as well as the marked addition of potential immunization from liability via the government contractor defense. The assertion of this defense, however, can be rebutted by proving with clear and convincing evidence that fraud or willful misconduct occurred by the seller in submitting information to DHS certified technologies or also deemed approved products for Homeland Security by DHS. So what that's saying, if you're a defense contractor, you're not liable for anything.
Right, because governments have immunity for their actions for the most part.
You can only sue the government if they let you sue them.
Basically, yeah, and they're saying you can't sue these defense contractors because they're essentially standing in the shoes of the government.
Right. And it's saying the only exception to that is if you can prove outright fraud and negligence. So if they said, hey, this will do this or that, and yet you find internal documents where they say, hey, this doesn't do anything, but we think we can convince people that it will.
Yeah.
That's outright fraud.
Yeah.
But if it's just merely that, you know, it didn't work. We thought it would. All our tests showed it would work. We did the best we could. Sorry.
Yeah.
Then they don't have to pay a dime. They're under they're considered a defense contractor, and they don't have to pay anything.
Yeah, and I really, you know, based upon what we're talking about here and kind of going into a bit more, I don't think this was actually what this was enabled to do for the most part.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I understand it if it's a product or something like that, cybersecurity, you know, something like that, maybe a new weapon, something, a shielding device or something like that. I don't know. But to certify a security company that they're Homeland certified. Okay, so they know the proper way to do things. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be able to prevent acts of terrorism. I mean, I don't know how you could say that. And to say that they're new technology, this is supposed to help a rising new technology.
Yeah.
How do you say that a bunch of people in security gear are a rising new technology? I don't think that fits, and I think it was misapplied in giving them that.
Well, not only that, that'd be a protection for CSC, but what it does also is, I mean, it protects the downstream user of the service as well, because it basically says that since...
Everybody.
Yeah, since they use this certified provider of services, they can't be sued for anything.
Yeah, it said the act itself provides that the only proper party defendant to a lawsuit arising out of an act of terrorism is the seller. Thus, customers, clients, subcontractors, and vendors that either consume the technology or support the seller in deploying the technology are immune from liability.
Yeah. So basically what the other thing is that they're trying to say that this was an act of terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's kind of a very contentious type thing about what is terrorism, what's not terrorism.
But CSC, by being the seller, they're saying is the only one that's liable, and CSC can say, we did the best we could do, we're a defense contractor, so we don't have to pay anything. You can't hold us liable.
Yeah.
So then nobody pays.
Yeah, and then these victims are basically without any kind of recourse for what took place.
Right.
Now we're going to get into what outlines terrorism, but before we get into that, I think there might be some motions today.
Well, Your Honorship there, we don't actually have paying court costs. We have an amicus curiae. We want to file on behalf of a friend of the court.
All right, who is filing the amicus curiae brief today?
The Adventure Zone, new book out by our fine friends at The Adventure Zone.
That's right. The McElroys, in case you don't know, which I can't believe if you're listening to this podcast, you don't.
You know the McElroys.
You know the McElroys.
Even the old Daddy Clint's with them. Justin, Travis, and Griffin with old Daddy Clint.
That's right. They have a podcast called The Adventure Zone. If you don't listen to it, you're crazy, and you should. It's awesome. It's an RPG or a Dungeons and Dragons type adventure where
RPG. I thought that was a rocket propelled grenade.
It's a role playing game.
Oh well, you don't get those two mixed up.
That's right. That'd be a colossal mistake.
Colossal.
But I'll tell you what else would be a colossal mistake. If you don't pick up a copy of this book.
That's right.
They have done a book based upon their first season, Here There Be Gerblins.
Here There Be Gerblins!
So they have a graphic novel, which has just been released. I guess it's been about a week or so at this point. But it has hit the bookshelves, and you should get out and pick it up and snatch it up and buy it and read it.
And the main reason is because that can help make it a number one bestseller. And then I can say, my son-in-law helped with a number one bestseller.
That's right. And then I can say, I know Justin McElroy, and my podcast partner...
I used to record in his basement.
He used to let me in his basement.
When I was a little kid.
But seriously...
Back in season one. This is season 3.
But seriously, you should check this book out. I've had a chance to flip through it and read it, It's awesome. The illustrations are awesome. And the story itself is gripping and speaks for itself. So check the book out. Listen to the podcast. Buy the t-shirt. Do it all.
That's right. Now, Audio Boom, send the bill to the Adventure Zone. We didn't have any ads.
We'll give you the address. So, speaking of terrorism.
Speaking of terrorism.
What defines acts of terrorism?
Well, by statute, an act of terrorism is an act determined by the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security that, number one, is unlawful. So that's the first thing. It's got to be against the law. You can't have an act of terrorism that's okay.
Seems like a good place to start.
Number two, it just seems strange that that's in there. That's all of number one, is unlawful.
Duh.
Number two, causes harm to a person, property, or entity in the United States or in the case of a domestic United States air carrier or a United States flag vessel or a vessel based principally in the United States on which United States income tax is paid and whose insurance coverage is subject to regulation in the United States, in or outside the United States. And number three, uses or attempts to use instrumentalities, weapons, or other methods designed or intended to cause mass destruction, injury, or other loss to citizens or institutions of the United States. Importantly, the final rule to the Safety Act expands on the definition of harm to include financial harm.
Oh, so that's where they're getting into the whole kind of cyber technology and things like that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's not just saying killing people and blowing up buildings or boats or planes. It's saying that if you cause financial harm.
I mean, that's a pretty broad definition of what terrorism is.
Mm-hmm.
I think terrorism applies to quite a bit of things you see in the news under that definition, or could
yeah,
conceivably.
But, you know, they have not come out and declared that what happened at Vegas was an act of terrorism.
Yeah, they have not, actually. There's been some talk about it, and some people have said that. And, you know,
I mean, if it's not, what is it? Is it just because he was an American? That means it wasn't terrorism? I don't think so. Look at the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah.
That was an act of terrorism by an American.
Basically, what they say in their motion to the court or their complaint to the court, which I had a chance to read through, is they say that there is no requirement in the statute or regulations of an ideological motive or objective for the attack for it to meet the requirements of the Safety Act. It says basically that guns, bump stocks, high-capacity magazines, incendiary rounds, and explosives found in the gunman's suite and van qualify as weapons intended to cause mass injury. I mean, this guy even, I think he was trying to shoot fuel tanks and things that were around there as well. I mean, he was trying to cause mm-hmm. a lot of destruction. I mean, I don't know. I think it probably, based on that definition, it seems like it pretty much fits.
Well, I mean, yeah, you read through those 3 points. It was unlawful.
Yeah.
It did cause harm to individuals of the United States, and they use weapons of mass destruction.
It talks about in this complaint, it says, high-capacity magazines capable of holding between 60 and 100 rounds, illegal incendiary rounds intended to blow up the fuel tanks adjacent to the concert. Paddock used these weapons and instrumentalities to fire hundreds of rounds at the crowd, and he fired incendiary rounds which struck the fuel tanks, but fortunately missed the fuel. It said that he brought in his van, which he parked in the hotel garage. It had 90 pounds of explosives, consisting of 20 2-pound containers of exploding targets, 10 1-pound containers of exploding targets, 2 20 pounds of bag of explosive precursors. And it said no MGM party attempted to commit, knowingly participate in, abetted, committed, or participate in any conspiracy to commit any act of terrorism or criminal act related to the mass attack. So they're saying, hey, he brought all this stuff in. He had a big plan to do some major damage. We had no idea about it. So we're not negligent.
Right.
So, and that's really the main theory that I think any kind of plaintiff's lawyer is going to bring about against MGM. It's going to be your kind of run-of-the-mill negligence claim. It's very similar to a car accident type case.
Well, I mean, when you look now that they know what they're looking for, and they look back on surveillance videos and see these giant duffel bags of weapons that he was bringing in, it's like, why didn't somebody look at that?
Yeah.
But that's easy to say after the fact.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it should have been or not. It's hard to say.
Well, when you look at negligence, we go back to what the four elements of it are: duty, breach, cause, and damages. So,
duty.
Did they have some sort of duty to protect the concert goers, first of all? They own the venue. They own the property there. I think that's kind of a no-brainer. Yes, they did have a duty to defend the concert goers.
Mm-hmm.
No questions asked about that. This is kind of not different if that there was a concert at a bar or something like that and a fire broke out and they didn't have sprinklers and people died in that. You know, it's a very similar thing. They have a responsibility to protect the people that are there. So I think that's not really a question. Now, did they breach that duty? That's the million-dollar question right there, and that kind of gets at what you were saying about, is that you have to ask yourself, what could they have done differently?
I mean, they had a Homeland Certified Security Department.
Yeah.
So you couldn't ask for any more than that, supposedly.
And that's going to be the main thing that these plaintiffs want to say, is that basically they had inadequate security.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, based on everything, the guy, he basically moved an arsenal into his hotel room. Should that have raised someone's suspicions? You know, I mean, who knows? I think it might be a reasonable question to ask a jury, at least to determine it. So it might meet that threshold question. But as far as what did they do in their defense? I mean, you said they hired a security company to provide it. They were certified by Department of Homeland Security. So,
and what I read on their website, they were one of the very first to get this designation.
Yeah, and I'm sure this company made a lot of money based off that designation.
That's right.
So,
and they also saved a lot on insurance probably based off that designation.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And they could go out and get a lot of business because they are also immunizing their potential buyers.
Yeah.
Their now, customers.
You can't tell me they didn't go in there and sell that up whenever they're trying to get these contracts.
Yeah, I wonder if they really thought that out. I mean, I wonder if that was discussed ahead of time. Because it seems like MGM has been a long time coming forward since that happened to do this. I have to think they thought this up afterwards. Surely this security group didn't have the conscience to go in there and say, hey, look, and if anything happens, they can only come to us, and we're immune. We're a defense contractor.
They probably do. If they were smart and they're trying to sell their services to somebody, they can say, here's why you should hire our company over this other company. We're certified. We give you immunity. Not only do we protect your customers, we protect you.
Well, that could be, but I'm saying, would they? I mean, there's one thing, they go in and they say, look, we're certified by Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
That means that we know what we're doing. Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But do they come in and say, oh, and also financially, this is the way it works? I don't know that kind of conversation actually took place. I mean, had anybody really ever thought that through to do that ahead of time? I'm thinking if they did, why wouldn't MGM have come out the next day before everything got started and say, oh, by the way, you know, here's what we did. We're immune. Why wait till now and then do it?
I bet they did. I bet this is not some sort of new thing that just popped up in the past week and they're like, hey, wait a second, I have an idea. They've known about this for a long time. I bet when they sell this to different companies for security and things like that, I would be surprised if they did not bring that up. And I think the reason that maybe MGM did not bring that up to begin with is that, I mean, think about how much flack it caught yesterday when they brought this up.
Yeah. So you wait till it dies down.
You wait till it dies down a little bit. It'll fire back up again. Then, you know, I guarantee that, you know, large companies like this do not just look at things haphazard like this. They look at every single dollar and cent type thing, exposure, whatnot. I bet this is something that is not kind of a new thing. They planned this out and knew that this was a way for them to avoid any kind of liability, and that was a benefit of hiring this company.
Well, I just think Homeland Security, if this is the way this works, Homeland Security made a mistake in certifying this company for simply being a qualified security company. I don't think that meets it. I mean, when you look at the act, the technology eligible to be a QATT includes and gets QATT. It's a qualified anti-terrorism technology.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're talking about. Any product, equipment, service, including support services, device or technology, including information technology, or any combination of the foregoing, design services, consulting services, engineering services, software development services, software integration services, threat assessments, vulnerability studies, and other analysis relevant to Homeland Security may be deemed a technology.
Yeah. So basically they were saying, hey, we those last few you named off, we can detect threats, we can envision things, and we'll make sure this is going to be a safe going on. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see that as being in there. Now, you could construe some things. It says service. Any product, equipment, service. Okay, this is a service.
Yeah.
But is it a new technology?
Well, but they don't just say new technology. The last few things you mentioned there basically said that they could prevent...
That may be deemed a technology.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. And they're looking for new. The whole reason for the act is to try to bring forth new technologies.
Yeah.
Not to take what we already have and put a stamp of approval on it.
Well, I think whoever wrote that was overly broad with what they were writing, is my guess. And that goes back to, like, my whole knee-jerk reaction to 9/11, is that when you rush legislation through like this, your intent might be good, but you don't actually think all these things through completely. You make them overbroad and just kind of get too much stuff going on there. So that's my problem with it. And there's that whole era of things that were passed after 9/11 that, you know, I just wonder if we really thought about the ramifications of it all the way down the line.
Such as the phone taps and all the other kind of stuff?
Yeah, the Patriot Act and things like that. So I just don't think that we were really thinking with a clear head when we did that.
Now they've rolled back on tracking phones.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a change, although we won't need to anymore with the way people are rummaging through trash cans and finding people's DNA. We're solving 30-year-old crimes now.
Now, one interesting thing that I was thinking about, just as a logistic thing as a lawyer, they sued over 1,000 people with this deck action.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if you read through the complaint, it's 60-some pages, and probably about 4 of it are meat and potatoes of the essence of it. The rest of it is them just naming off people's names and stating where they believe they live in Las Vegas, or they believe they reside here. They believe it's basically just saying who these 1,000 people are.
For what? Aren't they all people that were somehow affected?
Well, they're just laying out jurisdictional basis for it.
Oh.
They're basically saying that this person, because whenever you file a complaint, you say, Tommy Smurl, I believe, upon information and belief, is a resident of Cabell County, West Virginia, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So just jurisdictionally, you're laying out
where these people are.
So most of it...
So that they don't take it to some other court. Well, one of the protections is it has to go to the federal court.
Right, and they filed this in federal court because they're trying to avoid going to state court on all these different lawsuits.
Right. So, well, and it's saying that also I think it has to be all done together. I don't know that they could file a bunch in a bunch of different federal courts.
Well, they might not be able to. If they did file in different federal courts, there's actually a procedure for removing lawsuits that are essentially the same in different federal courts to multi-district litigation, which basically where everything is kind of pulled together in one area. So even if they did file in different places, I think they probably would all be pulled together in one kind of lawsuit. But
well, they'd come under the same thing, you would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
That CSC, they advertise in there where they got this. It says, having recognized the value to their clients of becoming a Safety Act holder, as well as the necessity for service providers to be Safety Act holders, CSC began the process in 2009 of gaining this coveted credential and has now become the first in the industry's history to achieve this status. CSC technology has a set of core competencies in addition to a set of enhanced customer-driven activities, including physical security, access control, and crowd management. The technology also includes CSC's quality assurance procedures. This includes a selection, vetting, and training of employees, periodic internal, external, third-party, and red team assessments of CSX effectiveness, as well as the annual review process. Okay, so far, that's thorough, but I don't see anything exceptional out of any of that. That would just be a well-run security company.
Yeah.
CSC remains committed to continuous review and improvement in the delivery of its certified qualified anti-terrorism technologies. CSC founder Damon Zumwalt stated, "We feel this illustrates our unwavering commitment to our clients and their guests in preventing and responding to any potential hazards or acts of terrorism. By our continuing to review and modify the proven techniques of our QATT, we are looking at as the innovative leader of event security services, and we will continue to do all we can to maintain that title."
See, here's the thing. I don't doubt that this company did everything they were supposed to with regards to people that were actually in that venue, in the premises, making sure nobody came in with guns, weapons,
exactly,
things like that.
They probably responded well. 3 of their people were shot. 1 died.
Yeah, so I think
in trying to help people when they came under fire.
I think they probably did everything they could have foreseeably done. I don't think they ever thought about some madman knocking out a window on the 32nd floor and
shooting
down.
What could
they
have done even if they did think of it?
Well, they could. They could.
They have snipers to snipe him before he could do it?
Well, I mean, think about whenever you've gone to see the president when they've done speeches and places like
that.
They
do have snipers.
They have snipers on the things. They make sure that nobody's in any of these buildings along the way that can shoot out of them. So,
but how far do you go? What and how, you know, who does that? What type of event do you do that for?
Yeah.
You know who else is certified in it? The NFL.
Are they?
Yeah. They have that certification because of their stadium protocols.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Now, you tell me that if somebody wanted to, they couldn't probably do something at an NFL stadium? I mean, if they really, really were intent on it? And, I don't think that they should be immune. I wonder if that's something that they all got together and said, hey, look, guys, all the rich owners of the NFL, hey, look, guys, we get this in our stadiums. We don't have anything to worry about should one of these terrible events happen.
Yeah. But, you know, and also, if we don't have these kinds of protections for that, do we stop having NFL games? Do we stop having concerts because it becomes too cost effective?
Yeah, cost prohibitive.
Cost prohibitive, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because of all the security you'd have to have. I'm just saying, I believe they were probably a very well-trained security force.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they weren't. I'm not saying they screwed anybody over. I'm just saying I think it was a mistake. They were the first ones. So it's obvious, not like everybody that comes along goes and gets that. I just think that was a mistake saying it because they could not in good conscience say, we can prevent anything from happening. Our training is so superior, and we hire such good quality people, we can prevent any type of mass situation. No, you can't.
Yeah.
People alone aren't going to do that. You got to have a lot more than just your people.
Well, I think the bottom line is that, to get back to kind of the basis of the article that Cheryl Hopper posted on Facebook. Thanks, Cheryl.
There you go, Cheryl.
That when you click on an article like that and you see the topic or the headline of it, there's a bit more to it sometimes because, you know, MGM is not suing the victims of this in traditional way, because I guarantee whoever wrote that headline up thought, oh, this is going to get some clicks.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a deck action regarding coverage.
You know, and the truth is, as much as you hate to hear it, if you're the CEO of MGM or whatever, or you're the people that are in stand to lose the money, your job is to protect your shareholders.
And they're also helping the victims out.
Right.
That's what they said, right?
Yeah, that's what they said. But your job is to protect your shareholders.
Exactly.
You know, just like they were having in the military room when they were discussing, they said, well, should there be an attack, the most important thing is to protect the generals. And one guy raised his hand and he said, I think it's more important to protect your privates.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over different legal terms that we talked about. I'm going to keep this one probably pretty quick and brief. So, what is a deck action?
A deck action, that's a declarative judgment.
Well, declaratory judgment.
Declaratory judgment.
Yep.
And that means that you're going to state right out front that we didn't do it.
Well, you're kind of right, but basically you're asking the court to declare the rights and other legal relations of parties in a case or actual controversy. So essentially what you're saying is you have a genuine question about something that you need the court to make a ruling on to determine whether or not the rights and liabilities under this controversy, which actually exists. So you're saying, hey, I don't think I should have to pay for this. I want you to make a determination right now. So it's kind of a first step that you do. A lot of times,
almost a move for a mistrial.
Well,
or a summary judgment or something. I mean,
maybe.
You're wanting them to drop the case right there.
You're not. You're asking the court to make a determination kind of quickly. So I guess I could see it most similar to a motion for summary judgment, because eventually, well, it's kind of different though, because the party's employee are different. Because MGM basically in this case they would definitely be sued, but the CSC might not ever be sued under the lawsuit.
Right.
So, you know, most likely if that was the case, then MGM would have to file a complaint against CSC as part of that lawsuit as well.
Right.
So there'd be a third party plaintiff and a third party defendant. And when you get into third party practice like that, you know, all in the same lawsuit, it gets super confusing. So, in a lot of ways, I mean, it does make a lot of sense to go ahead and just get this you know, there's, this is the elephant in the room. Here's what we're going to say. Let's just go ahead and talk about it and figure it out. So I kind of see where they're coming from with it. So, but that's just me being a dispassionate lawyer.
You should have passion if you're going to be a lawyer.
I had passion one time.
Passion fruit?
What is the Safety Act?
Safety Act came about in 2002 after the 9/11 attacks. And it was designed to encourage the development of new technologies that may help in preventing future terrorism attacks.
That's right. Basically what it was. It was a post-9/11 type response to supposedly help technology, but it's been applied in this case to...
Rather loosely.
Now, I know I've asked you this question on several other episodes of this podcast.
So then I better know it.
We haven't talked about it in a while, though.
Oh.
What are the elements of a negligence cause of action?
Duty.
You're right on. You always get that one. I don't know why.
It's the first one.
It's the first one.
Duty, breach, honor, and passion.
I think those are different Pokemon team names. No, it's duty, breach, cause, and damages. Those are the four elements.
Yeah, that was it.
So, well, that's going to do it for legal briefs.
Well, I got one for you.
Oh boy, here we go.
What is it? An acronym? COT stand for?
COT?
Yeah.
Quality Assurance Terrorism Team?
No.
I don't know what.
Qualified Anti-Terrorism Technology.
Oh, well, I was close.
Gosh, you have to be careful how you say that.
Yeah, you do. There's you really, really slip the tongue. Slip of the tongue on that one.
Slip of the tongue.
Nep of
put
the,
you in deep.
Nape of the neck. I don't know what that means.
You don't want your neck naped.
No, you don't.
Now that's going to do it for legal briefs.
That's
going
to do it for legal briefs. You get the final word.
Yeah, I only have them every now and then, but that was one I'd memorized on there, so I thought I'd just throw it back out at you.
Yeah, I don't usually throw acronyms at you too often, I don't think, do I?
Sometimes you do.
Sometimes? Yeah. You're like, yeah, you do all the time.
Not all the time, but sometimes.
Yeah.
It's your duty.
Well, now that you've properly quizzed me for legal briefs, I think that's actually going to do it.
All right.
Well, you know what they say.
What's that?
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind.
Because your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. Oh, is that all you're doing?
No, I don't want to do any more of it.
That was a way of giving it back to you.
No, that's enough. That's enough of it.
Oh, okay.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a premium interior paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Say big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save.